G'day, it's Daniel Harford. Welcome to the best of the Breakfast Club on RSN 927. It was jam-packed. Check it out.
Scotty Gallen's back with us on a Monday morning from the Herald Sun. Always great to see him. Scotland, good morning.
Morning, Daniel.
Nice to have you with us.
It's wonderful to be here.
How was your weekend?
Solid.
Oh, solid.
I had a Bucks show. At Dunkeld Races.
Did you? You'd be a Dunkeld specialist, I reckon.
I was on debut there. It's a fair way away, you know, slow bus.
Did you go to the Royal Mail Hotel?
No. They shut it on the biggest day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it just gets too out of control.
Too out of control.
So there's a lot of people there. It's a bit cold, a bit chilly, but a lot of fun. Long day, Daniel.
That was the Saturday edition?
That was Saturday, yes. A lot of liquid going in the body.
Well, hydration's important, as you well know.
It was well hydrated. So, yeah, yesterday I just recuperated because I have a big day ahead.
Today. Today's a big day.
It's a big day.
It's a big day on the Breakfast Club. Starting the day right on the Breakfast Club. Speaking of the Breakfast Club, the main man around here is Adam White. He's back again for another week of sporting love and insight. Good morning to you, Whitey.
Good morning. Now, I can report, it's on Channel 9 at the moment, that John Noble and Isaac Quayner have just signed new deals. That's leading the sport today on Channel 9.
Is there any sarcasm early from our man?
Well, I think it shows.
He's come.
Well, it's interesting.
Has BJ got us some...
He was here early today.
And I noticed
I think
that.
He's quite rattled by that. It's thrown his routine out of whack.
It is interesting, though, because, and I'm being serious, it is a very quiet time of year in the world of sport. And if you look over the course of the weekend, there wasn't very many significant things that happened.
Well, a throwdown victory by Melbourne United by 1 point over South West Melbourne Phoenix.
And we'll get to all of that.
Fantastic. That's a highlight. Webby hitting sixes to win the game.
There was a 4-3 soccer result last night and all that sort of thing. But when it comes to sort of, you know, big time mainstream type activity.
Brisbane beat Melbourne City 4-3.
That's what I just said. 4-3.
Well, it's the calm before the test.
No, it is. But this is the thing.
Drafts next week.
And I'm not an advocate for this as such. But it is interesting the conversation around who owns November, mid November. You know, past the Melbourne Cup, the 2 weeks after the Melbourne Cup. Not a lot happens until the test series starts. Now, sometimes the test cricket starts earlier than what it is now, but we are going through this period where there's not a lot of big time sport on.
Well, it depends what you define big time sport. There's heaps of stuff going on. It's just whether or not anyone's emotionally invested because they're too focused on the other big stuff that's not happening at the moment.
No, it is, but it is a time for the lesser sports to shine, or the, you know, domestically to shine. There's no doubt about that. But I'm just saying it's interesting because a lot of the commentary around the racing is that it gets lost in October because the AFL own it with the trade period, and that the football's still relatively fresh, that if it was pushed back 2 or 3 weeks, it wouldn't necessarily be a bad thing for racing because it is a quietish time, that's all. But and when you see what leads the Channel 9 news, and we talked about last week, we were sort of making light of the amount of stuff in the paper regarding AFL football.
Well, I'm concerned that there's no list today.
Finished.
No, there is a list. Sorry. There is a list.
Myths or...
Hidden myth. The AFL's most misunderstood players.
Oh, the buzz.
The buzz has hit hard today with that.
It was
BJ
special
last week with lists of categories of players. We even got the rucks in last week, which was fantastic.
I was waiting for the bench.
I thought the interchange from might have got a mention. Yeah. But the hits and myths of AFL footy, the AFL's most misunderstood players, gets a run today. We need a list every day. Is that what happens at headquarters when you get back to work? It's, Scotty, we've got a list. We need a list.
Well, they don't come to me for lists because I think I've expressed my thoughts on lists. But the punters eat it up. As Whitey said, they've got time on their hands. So read a bit of AFL, a bit of theory from the buzz. It works. I think the Chief's got a special coming up too.
What's the Chief doing? On the top 50 special edition.
I don't think I can reveal what the parameters are.
Well, I was just going to ask you, but you're clearly not going to tell
me. No, I can't. The Chief will be snoozing out in the sticks of Warrandyte, so he won't hear.
Leafy suburbs.
I believe it's something to do with the 50 of the past decade.
Oh, I'll be a chance.
Don't quote me on that, but I think it's the past decade.
Right.
10-year top 50.
That's a good list.
It is a good list. conjecture, because some creep into, you know, 11, 12 good stuff, but better stuff was earlier. So it's not as obvious as it sounds for the Chief.
Chief, what? Chief just about ready to shut down, shut down the shop, isn't he?
He's limped to the line. I think he's about done. This is his sayonara.
I noticed,
he's off to the beach shortly, isn't he?
Yeah.
I noticed our great friend Mark Stevens, who hasn't started his holidays yet, he's already doing summer training with clubs coming back.
I heard him do a...
Got to keep my butt tight.
Well, you've got to keep your body tight, as Steve O'Keefe
said. You know how he doesn't do... What is it? I'm not a TV man. He does the piece to cameras, but he doesn't do that other stuff.
With the actual voice reports.
He did one.
Did he?
And it was awkward. It was like he clearly didn't want to do one. God love him. There was a lot of pauses and letting the footage talk for itself.
Right.
Well, that's important.
I giggled because I knew he was under different rules to everyone else, the great man. Anyway, I think they've straightened him up.
Oh, Steve-O time. He's keeping his body tight right now, I reckon. And they build up to a big summer. And there'll be a lot of oil for Steve, I reckon, through the summer.
Oh, period. Yeah, he's an oil man.
A lot of oil, yes. Possibly Crisco. vegetable oil.
Not just reef.
Not just straight to the Crisco.
Wouldn't put it past the great man. God love him.
Now, Whitey, I've been meaning to ask you this. We had a team dinner last night. It's called a Cup Week Radio dinner. A celebration of
luckily you explained a team dinner that I wasn't at.
No, that's right. Cup Week Radio.
You
celebration
that,
of awesomeness.
You said to me and looked at me and thought I'd better qualify this.
Well, I knew that you weren't supposed to be there, so it was okay. It was okay. Cup Week Radio was it was a triumph, is what it was.
Oh, it was a bonanza, Cup Week Radio.
A triumph. So we had a little catch up.
Where did we go?
Well, this is the thing. We went to
it's called Leadership Sky.
A fantastic little venue, which is heaving last night. It was too on a Sunday night. Jim's Greek Tavern.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic decision.
Collingwood. Great
everyone
venue.
Everyone likes a bit of souvlaki.
Doesn't everyone love it?
Yes.
What about the little octopus?
Yeah. Char grill.
The Chagra stuff. You love that?
Yes.
I'm concerned that my man... I was concerned about my man's...
He went there? No.
I don't know. He was sort of the other side of the table. I couldn't quite see what was going on, but I was interested. So I'm going to ask him.
He won't go.
Did you get into some octopus activity last night?
What do you think, Daniel?
Well, it was a share... Well, the other thing was it was a share plate situation.
Oh, that's not good for the leader.
Which is not what he's... It's not wheelhouse stuff for my man either.
He wants his own...
He needs a whole plate for himself.
Correct.
Just my plate and go away.
That's what leadership is. Sometimes you've got to put yourself out of your comfort zone. And when you've got Greek and then into shared plate situation, it's not starting at a high level for me.
So octopus, so, no?
At one point, it was about two-thirds of the way through the evening, I did turn to Kevin Bartlett and said to KB, how's the bread? Because between the two of us, we'd eaten a lot of bread and Coca-Cola.
Okay, but you're not a seafood person either. You used to do ads for some... seafood at a rival establishment.
Yes.
The flake.
The Fergonato. There was some... he had the fish and he had the calamari.
Did he?
Yeah, he was into that stuff. No. Wasn't big into the octopus.
No. Some other barbecue type activity came out a little bit later, and I knew that was coming, so I just had to be patient.
Oh,
and when that came, well, then I was okay.
What about just the fact you had to share with others?
No, I didn't.
The share plate.
Fortunately, I was near close friends, so it was okay. But I was...
I was concerned about your mindset.
Yeah, I don't like shared... I hate shared plates.
Well, you got to pretend you don't want as much as you really
want.
Well,
but exactly right. There's all sorts of... There's all sorts of things going on in that situation. You don't want to be seen as greedy.
Correct.
There are things, I'm very clear on what I want and what I don't want, and I just want it all on my plate, you know, and you can't have that. And I don't want other people taking things that I want, and just the whole shared situation of, you know, 3-4 forks going into something. No, not for me.
You've got to have a word to the waiter and say, mate, this is how it rolls. This end of the table. Suva's straight.
Well, once the grill sort of
came to life,
real pep in his step.
Yeah, that's right. But it wasn't as much of that as probably what there needed to be either.
Well,
anyway, it was a good night. It was a very good night. It was a very good night. We celebrated Cup Week Radio for the people that were involved in that, and a lot of our guys worked really hard over that period, and we were a proud team last night because I think we did a really good job of Cup Week Radio. And there was a lot of us there.
Did you sing a song?
We did. I thought there might have been some sort of sing along.
Yeah.
I was hoping for something.
I was doing an inspired speech.
Oh, you got up?
No, it was too loud.
No clinking. It was heavy.
Yeah, I know. There was all sorts of things going on.
Jim Skrek. Good choice. Good. Well played.
Very nice work.
Well, that was our social coordinator.
I didn't know we had a social coordinator, I must admit.
We have a social coordinator. His name is Matt Stewart.
That's concerned me that he is now the head of that department.
We've given him some leadership, and he did well.
That is positive from him.
It's a good result.
Although, admittedly, we left before he did, so...
Oh, you know, he'll be still...
Well, he's not getting up at the hour, is it? No, we do. True. So we decided to just do the right thing by all and sundry in the radio station and the listeners to The Breakfast Club who need us up and about.
Tommy Fleetwood is your 2019 Nedbank Golf Challenge winner. What a fabulous effort. A 65 to get into the playoff. First playoff hole par. And he beats Marcus Kenholt for his second Rolex event victory.
Nice work by Tommy. If you can get it, 2.2 million euros going into the pocket after he took out the Nedbank Golf Challenge, hosted, of course, by the great Gary Player at Sun City. Beautiful golf course to watch golf on in the European Tour in South Africa over the last 4 days. The scenery, the backdrop, a nice little way to contrast the greens of the fairways and greens, funnily enough.
Won't be as good as Royal Melbourne next month.
Well, I'm looking forward to Royal Melbourne next month, no doubt. No doubt Scotland for the President's
Cup. My mail is the stands are impressive. Like, that's how good it's going. People will see what's happened around the holes.
Oh, okay.
Apparently the driving range, the stands are bigger than you get at the Australian Open.
Is that right?
To watch punters warm
up. Where are we driving? Across the road? Like we normally do?
Don't they normally go across
the road to that...
Sandringham.
Is it Sandringham?
Yeah. Sandringham's being used for something, like a people's world or something.
Right.
I don't know where
they have used Sandringham as a driving range previously.
I don't think they are this time, though.
Okay. Right. Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to that, no doubt. But Tommy Fleetwood's not going to come. He's not coming, Tommy.
Tommy should not
come. Well, Tommy Fleetwood, this was an amazing story last night because he was six behind going into the final round.
Six?
He was six behind going into the final round. And he had a round of golf that included three eagles. So he hit the turn 5 under and then eagled 10 to go, obviously, 7 under through 10 holes. And the leading three combined, I think, were about 10 over. And
really?
So he and a guy called Bernd Weisberger came from the pack.
You've got to say it like this. Weisberger!
Yeah, and he's actually leading the race to Dubai. So he's had a terrific year.
And, like the amazing race, is it?
Tommy Fleetwood, what's that?
Is that like the amazing race?
What do you mean?
Is that the race to Dubai? Is that the
it's a little bit like that. They go all around the world and they finish in Dubai next week. So big event, Rolex Series event. The Nedbank used to be a sort of an invitee-only event where 12 or 14 would come.
Swing event?
And then, this is...
South part African of a swing.
South African swing.
This is the South African major. That's what they call it the African major.
Oh.
And Louis Oosthuizen was in the final group with Xander Lombard, both from South Africa. The expectation was that they would sort of maybe be between the two of them.
Oh, Louis.
And Fleetwood posted a number and then in the end got into a playoff and had an incredible up on down on the first playoff hole to win. So that's pretty impressive to have three eagles in your round. Finished with a 65 ultimately, and that was good enough to win.
Nice work from Tommy. Jason Scrivener keeps winning lots of money.
Yeah, he does.
He just made, 555,000 Australian by finishing a tie for third.
Now that is, beautifully. I would say, and Jason, hopefully we can catch up with him soon, I would say that that's the best result of his career, what has just happened to him. With the money that was on offer this week and to finish in a tie for third, I don't think it's got much bigger than that for him. So that's an amazing result.
That's a pretty good result. I would have thought 555 into the kick. Thank you very much for Jason Scrivener. But Tommy Fleetwood, too good. Marcus Kenholt was the other... Did we mention him?
He was the one that got in the playoff. He did really well to hold his nerve to par the last three holes to get into a playoff and then hit a horrendous tee shot on the first playoff hole and it was always going to be difficult after that for him.
It can happen. It can happen. I'm just hoping it doesn't happen today. That's what we don't want, Scotty.
Yes.
We don't want horrendous tee shots opening things.
There's been preparation.
Today. Is there any US PGA action across the weekend?
It's in Asia, so it's the Mackie
Of course, the Mayakoba.
Mayakoba
Golf Classic. Brendan Todd's in the lead there with one round to play. He hasn't teed off in his last round yet.
Did you see what...
I've never heard of these people. Brendan Todd, Harris English, Vaughn Taylor sounds like a pro from Sandringham.
He's been around for a very long time. Vaughn Summers. he's been around for a long time. This is an amazing story that's unfolded over there. Was Russell Henley. You see what happened to him?
Russell Henley, no. What happened to Russell Henley? I've heard of him.
He was in the paper here. Somewhere.
He finished his round of golf and realised that he had been using a ball that he wasn't sure was his. But he didn't realise until after the round, where I think he was either signing balls to give away to the fans or whatever, and realised that, this ball, that doesn't belong in my golf bag. I'm not sure how it got there. And he essentially gave himself an 8-shot penalty because he counted back and realised that on 4 of the holes he played with a golf ball that he hadn't told his other playing partners that he was using. And so, as a result of that, he gave himself a 2-shot penalty for every hole he used the golf ball on. So he gave himself. So he went from being in contention to missing the cut.
Well, that'll do it. That'll do it. 8 shots will do it mostly. Yeah.
It's a lot of honesty, Daniel.
Oh, I was going to say,
it's one of those games with golf, isn't it? Calling penalties on yourself. You're not waiting for the ref to step in or the umpire to say, that's a free kick, mate.
But particularly in this situation where no one would have known, and even he wasn't 100% sure what had gone on, but he looked in his bag and a particular ball wasn't marked the same way as some of his other ones. And this is after his round had been completed and he was off signing autographs or whatever, and then he's gone back to the hut and said, look, I don't feel comfortable about this. So I can't tell you exactly what's happened, but this is what I think has happened. And the organisers or the rules officials had a bit of a chat about it, and he said, no, it doesn't sit comfortably with me. I'm going to give myself 8 shots.
He clearly believes in the golfing gods.
Yes, the golfing karma.
Yeah.
The karma bus will come back and support him through this.
Because there's no other reason to do that.
No other reason whatsoever to do this. That is an unusual situation.
So I gather he was down the...
He wasn't.
He would have shot 69 had he not had the 8 stroker.
And he shot 67 on the first day, I think it was.
He would have been in the game.
So no, he was absolutely in contention.
66 he shot on the first day.
Yeah.
So he would have,
That's gutsy.
He would have been 7 under at the halfway mark and currently leading the tournament. Well, it's a bit more exotic now. 17 under is winning, but 7 under he would have been at the halfway mark.
Maybe he realised he had a wedding or something on the weekend. He had to
like
find
a local cricketer who's got to bat first.
That's right.
Just jump up the top of the order so you can bat for a dashing hour and then get back to the wedding. Great news for the President's Cup. Talking about that before Scotland, because Jason Day, 5 over, missed the cut.
5 over?
5 over.
What's going on there?
I don't know.
He got the Steve, what's his name?
Steve Williams.
That didn't work?
Yeah, no, I don't know. But I mean, we never can get to talk to him, obviously, but I think we're going to catch up with Ben Everill potentially this week just to talk about a few things in golf, and I think that is definitely going to be one of the conversations because he obviously knows Jason better than most, but it just hasn't happened for him.
Brads.com, 7 under. Abraham Anser, 12 under. I like Abraham. He's coming out for the Australian Open, isn't he, Abraham, to defend his title?
Mm-hmm.
12 under there, so he's 5 shots off the pace. That 8-shot penalty is quite unusual. Quite unusual. Good news, though. Good news, because the myth is that Christian Petrarca is one of the AFL's greatest teasers. He's a wasted as a forward because he doesn't kick enough goals. The reality, says The Buzz today,
is
the 4th best general forward in the competition based on player ratings points behind Gary Ablett, Kane Lambert, Jordan Degoe. Rates elite at his position for disposals, contested possessions, metres gained and clearances. So that's a myth that he is a tease, Christian Petrarca, says The Buzz today.
But he can go into the midfield. I think that's what we all want to see.
No doubt about that.
And Adam White's very keen to talk about this further.
I'd be surprised if that was the case. You mentioned before, Whitey, the result in the A-League overnight between Melbourne City and the Brisbane Roar.
4-3.
Did you see the numbers? 4-3.
We were 3-1 up, and they came from the cloud. And two players had triples, hat-tricks.
Hat-tricks.
Brisbane Roar haven't been able to score a goal all year.
Haven't scored a goal all year.
Fowler's first win.
First win was against the top of the table, Melbourne City, of course, our man Scotty Jamieson, the skipper. Would have been disappointed with that, being being up, Scotty, as you said, and then coughing up that lead to lose 4-3.
It's a disaster.
Well, I've said this before, and I'll say it again, Daniel.
Say it again.
The best player in the competition plays for Melbourne City. His name is Jamie McLaren, and he scored another 3 goals. Yes. First game back from injury. Came back earlier than expected.
He does that.
He's a superstar of the A-League.
No doubt.
Roy O'Donovan,
marquee player.
Had 3 for Brisbane. It was 3 for 3.
3 for 3.
83rd minute penalty to win it from Roy.
Nice work from Roy. But when you, as you say, when you're 3-1 up, you should close that out when you're a team like Melbourne City. They'll be disappointed with that. Very, very disappointed.
And Victory gave up a 1-0 lead as well, so they're not going too well either.
Well, City are pretty good. So I wasn't overly surprised with that, I must admit, but they do sort of suck at the moment.
Yeah.
They're
that's unfamiliar.
1 win from six games, and they won last week, didn't they? They won last week, which was at home, I think it was. Or they might have drawn last week. But they 1 win out of 6. Marco Kurtz is under pressure. Robbie Crews got some minutes, importantly, for the Melbourne Victory across the weekend, so that was a good result. And the other team in Victoria, Western United, went down to Newcastle, which was a disappointment for Western United, because Newcastle hadn't won a game either up until that. And that was a home game at your neck of the woods, Scotty, GMHBA Stadium.
Yes.
And they weren't able to get the job done, so they'd be disappointed about that. Very much so. The other game that was played across the weekend was Adelaide United 3-1 away to Central Coast Mariners, who, well, they've won one game. So we've got a really interesting ladder in the A-League. There are six of the 11 teams have won one game or less in 5 or 6 encounters, depending on which team you're talking about. Melbourne Victory have played 6, the others have played 5. It's not a lot of wins. So the teams at the top of the table, City, Sydney FC, Western Sydney and Western United, they've won 3 or 4. So they're dominating proceedings at the moment in the A-League, which is very interesting. Jamie McLaren, your man, scored 7 goals his first 3 games this season. And he scored for the Socceroos a couple of times when he's missing those games for City. So I think he is the selling point of the A-League at the moment. We don't see him used in that role.
Well, this is the point I want to lead to, that they've finally got someone that scores some goals and has a bit of spunk about him. They've got to get him out there. They've really got to get these guys out there.
He speaks well.
He does. But they've got to promote who they've got. It's incredibly frustrating. There's a text here that says, obviously, Adam, you didn't grow up in a big family. That's from Paul, because of my dislike. It's probably not strong enough for shared plates.
Not strong enough. Your hatred?
Disdain would probably be a more appropriate word.
Right.
That's incorrect. Grew up in a very big family, but led by my mother, who had a very, and she still does because she's very strong on this. You order something and you own that, and you order what you want to eat and you eat it. And that's what happens. And I'm very comfortable with that rationale. You've got a whole menu to choose from.
Not in the shared
plate situation. Pick something you want to eat, and that's yours.
Not in the shared plate situation, though.
And if you have a vanilla slice, right, for example, if you say, yes, I'd like a vanilla slice, thank you, and then someone else says, I'd like a chocolate brownie, then that's fine. Yours is the chocolate brownie. Mine's a vanilla slice.
I'd like a bit of
Can I cut off a bit of vanilla slice? No, because you had the choice to get a vanilla slice when you're in the bakery and you chose the chocolate brownie.
I'd like to have both.
So next time you go to the bakery, choose the vanilla slice if you're that keen on one.
Can't we just have half each?
No.
Why wouldn't we just have half each?
If that's decided in the bakery beforehand,
that
might be different.
That's a grey area.
That might be different.
That's a grey area.
But if you have got your heart set on the fact that you are going to eat an entire vanilla slice, you're not distributing parts off to other people when you sit down to consume it.
I'd share. If you wanted some, I'd give you some.
No.
I would.
I wouldn't ask for it.
Yes, you would. Because you want my vanilla slice.
No. I would have bought one.
Love it.
I would have bought one in the first place. So that's my rationale. So that's the same with if you go to a meal and you have, like, you order a chicken parmigiana or something and you get mocked, oh, you have the chicken parmigiana again, and then it comes out, oh, gee, that chicken parmigiana looks good. Would you be able to give me a bit? No, thank you. If you're stupid enough to order the chicken salad, that's your issue.
He's very passionate about this, Daniel.
Very passionate on Monday morning.
I suspect his children are probably following suit. They're not.
Well, there'd be no choice.
Sharers of great nature.
There's going to be some concern at school. The share play comes out at school. Oh, I'm not sure how the kids are going to deal with that.
Just panic. That'll be...
Craig Gabriel is watching the ATP Tour Finals unfold as we speak.
Guys, good to be with you again. Do you think being inside Whitey's mind or head would be something like being John Malkovich or one of that sort of a feeling? Well, it's a bit weird.
Are you? Hang on. Are you a shed plate man?
I'd rather not.
Yeah, correct. There you go.
Yeah.
That's what we're talking about today.
Is that what it was? Right. I caught the tail end of it for a moment, yeah.
Yeah, no shared plates. Yeah,
I'm still not sure you want to be in there, Craig. I'm still not sure you want to be in his mind. Has it been received, the tournament? Because I know that the WTA finals in China had some issues from a patronage perspective and they weren't overly engaged in the contest, but this seems to be a little bit different.
No, this is totally different. It's very established over here. Having said that, this is the second last year it's in London. Next year will be the final time, and then it moves to Turin in Italy. And I think it'll be a success over there, especially if somebody like Matteo Berrettini or Fabio Fognini makes the final eight. I think certainly Berrettini is likely to do it next year, but in that year rather, and it'll be a success there. But this is huge. I mean, it's sold out. It's 17,000 people here at the O2 Arena.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that means that's well received, obviously, from the point of view of getting the people there. But just an overall view, because, you know, we get to a final and neither Federer or Nadal are there, and Djokovic isn't there as well. And, I mean, do they care as much about that as, say, a Grand Slam?
Yeah, look, they certainly do. I mean, atmosphere here has been fantastic this past week. It genuinely has. And it is pretty amazing that the big three, none of the big three, are in the final. Now, I'll give you a couple of stats. The last time that happened at this event, where all three were actually playing, and none of them reached the final, was 2009 in Shanghai, when Nikolai Davidenko ended up winning. And the last time it happened at any tournament on the tour was Miami 2010, March 2010, when neither Federer, Nadal, or Djokovic reached the final, and they were all in the event that year. So it just shows how they've dominated this sport. But what I think is just tremendously exciting, and we've been speaking about the younger players breaking through, and there hasn't quite been the consistency, but we are now starting to see that consistency because the young ones essentially dominated the eight here in London.
And Roger got asked the annual question, you know, is this the year they're going to come and pass you? And he sort of said yes, but then he said, oh, hang on, look at the Grand Prix, the slams.
Yeah. Well, look, he did. He said, you know, this year was a year where we were still out there with the majors, and we, you know, the three of us were all pretty fit in previous years. You know, we've had niggles and whatnot. He says, we've been talking about this. Nadal said the same thing about these young players, but they were starting to hint that maybe next year we could start seeing a breakaway from the top three winning the majors.
If we had to, regardless of what happens today, Craig, which one of this new batch will win the Aussie Open or the first Grand Slam off the other three?
I think maybe Dominic Thiem could be the first one, and possibly at the French. He's been the finalist at the French the last couple of years. And then, you know, we saw this year what Stefanos Tsitsipas did at the Australian Open, just absolutely came out of the blue and reached the semifinals over there. But, look, there are so many of them. I think next year Alexander Zverev will pick things up. This year has not been a good year by his standards. And let's not forget Daniil Medvedev as well, who's just, I think, just a fantastic player. You know, finalist at the U.S. Open just 2 months ago. So, look, there's so many to pick from, but I think it may be Thiem. He's a little bit older than the others at 26, but I think he might be the one with a little bit more experience to win one of the majors first.
So after this, do they all just shut down for a couple of months and get ready for the Australian Open? Is that the next phase for them?
Yeah, essentially. I mean, at the top 10, and there are 70 of the guys over here, only about half of them are playing the Davis Cup, the new look Davis Cup final in Madrid next week. So all the others here are starting to shut down. Federer is not playing Davis Cup. Djokovic and Nadal are already in Madrid. I'm heading there tomorrow. But they'll take a bit of time off. A lot of them go to the Maldives to get away, and then they start their training programs in readiness for Australia. And certainly in January, we've got the new event leading into the Australian Open, the ATP Cup for the men. And that's in Brisbane, Sydney and Perth.
Ted Richards, though, has been good enough to join us. He's doing a lot of running in the last little while, and I want to find out why. Ted, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Great to have you with us. Now, tell me, what sort of quaddy burn did you get climbing the Eureka Tower yesterday?
Yeah, that quaddy glutes. Kind of bit of lactic, just where it hasn't been lactic in a while.
At what stage of the climb, how far up the tower were you when the lactic really started to kick?
So it's 88 floors, and it probably hit in for me at about floor number 20, where, but in saying that, I can remember I hit the sixth floor, and there was a lady that had stopped for a breather at the sixth floor.
You got 82. What did you say to her, Teddy?
Oh, I said, well done, goodbye.
This is the issue, Ted. Do you push people out of the way? How do you surge?
I passed a few, so just a little passing and bit of a boost to the little tickle to the ego. But there's a lot of people that are kind of, I think, a bit of buyer's remorse a quarter of the way through, half the way through, going, what am I doing? I'm stuck in a firewall. It's a long way out of here.
Now, most people, if they run a marathon, would take about 6 months to recover. You did the New York Marathon 2 weeks ago, yet you're climbing stairs at Eureka yesterday.
Yeah, in hindsight, didn't mind these two events up quite that well. So I was asked if I'd be interested in doing this event. And you know what? It was about a month ago. I was like, you know what? I'm feeling fit, feeling great. Why not? And then, when you've still got a bit of DOMS and muscle soreness from the marathon, and you realise I'm now going from a horizontal challenge to a vertical challenge, it's not so much a good idea.
Did you train for the actual stair climbing?
No. Well, I work in an office building. It's got a lift, and if you call occasionally, walking up the stairs, training. but apart from that, all the training was about the marathon. This was with all due respect, a bit of an afterthought and another challenge. I had a lot of fun, but, the marathon took me a bit over 3 hours, and this took me 12 minutes, so completely different types of things.
12 minutes. Now, we have some lift issues in our building.
It's actually true.
We're on the 10th floor, and we often have to walk up the lift, and things go quite well, and then all of a sudden it just hits you. Now, usually for me it's about the 4th floor. And you just don't know whether you can go any further. Did you get to that point where you just thought, I'm not sure whether I can keep doing this?
I did have a few mental demons along the way. On Friday afternoon, I did a bit of Googling and research. Turns out there's a fair bit of a stair climbing community around the world. And so I got a bit of their technique as to kind of using the handrail on how to get up. But there was this guy who's from Sydney who'd flown down from the event. And he was, I don't know why, he was doing it 15 times straight. So I shared the lift down with him one day once. And I said, oh, you know, how many get to go? And he goes, yeah, I've done 6. I've got 11 to go. I was like, you're crazy.
Yeah. Yesterday you did it that many times?
Yes, yeah.
This is yesterday, not over the last 15 years?
No.
Oh!
15 times, all in a go. And I said, where do you train? He goes, I just do this at, you know, lunchtime breaks and, you know, at work. And I thought, okay. Yeah.
See, does it hurt your knees or anything? Does it do any damage at all to you? Because it is a lot of stairs. Or is it of no training? Or is it because of the training you did with the marathon that it wasn't too many issues?
That helped hold me in good stead. It was all right, and got out of bed this morning. I was a bit sore, but it's not the knees. It's kind of more your core and your back. It's just there's no real technique. It's just try to pull yourself up and muster yourself up.
No, your back would be no good. That would hurt. My back's hurting just thinking about this. That's no good, Teddy. Why are you doing all this?
That's the question.
The marathon was the big bucket list item that I'd always wanted to do after footy, and I thought, I've got no intention of being a lifelong runner. If I'm only going to do one, let's make it a bit of an event. And a good mate of mine, Chris Heffernan, he came over too and ran in it as well. And I'm glad I did it. The experience was, it was an incredible memory. And the stair climb kind of came from nowhere. And, I'm quite competitive. I enjoy challenges. It gets me out of bed in the morning. And I don't know what the next thing will be, but I think it's fair time. I might just have a bit of time watching Netflix and settling down for a while.
The one person we get to all the time when he's on a train and got some service is Adam Collins when he's over there in the UK. We love chatting to him, but today's a special one because he's in the studio. We don't get this very often, but it's very, very pleasing. We're wrapped to have you, Collo. Good morning.
Half, it's good to be in the studio. I think I came in on this corresponding day last year before the first test match.
You did.
Lovely to come into RSN Towers and talk about the game we love for a little while.
Just for Scotty's benefit more than mine.
Yeah, Collo. Every time I was in this studio, we'd ring you.
Yeah.
It'd be like, ding, ding, ding. You're on a train.
Yeah.
And then your phone had cut off. Then we'd ring you back.
Yeah.
You're on a different train.
Well, the thing is that doing that World Cup trip, in order to make it work, we had to get trains about 9:30 in the evening to get to the next city for the next game. You know, the hectic, relentless schedule that is a World
Correct.
Cup, which often meant that when you were putting me to air, it was right in that travel windows. But we did the best we could. I remember there was one evening where I didn't say it on air, but I had missed the last train. Well, I was about to miss the last train out of Manchester, stumbled onto a train, then I wasn't able to get my videos off to what I needed to go to that night on the train, so I bundled off a train, and I was going to be stuck in a place called, I think it's Macclesfield, which is about 10 mile south of Manchester, and I wasn't going to make it to the game the next day, and so I saw a train coming on the phone to you guys and just dove on there, and that was just a last-ditch effort to make sure I got to where I needed to be.
We might just keep the background noise up for you, just to make you more familiar, more at home about talking to us when the trains are around. How knackered were you after the World Cup and the Ashes? Because you and Jeff worked your absolute rings off through that period. How knackered were you?
I think I was vaguely okay. I was definitely stuffed, but and not to draw a false parallel, but when you reflect on the sort of mental toll that cricketers are talking about far more openly at the moment, you experience a version of that because the game is fundamentally my passion, but equally it's my profession. And when you're doing these two things hand in hand every single day, it can be quite exhaustive when you get to day 132 or whatever it was by the time we wrapped it up without a breather. So we were spent, but equally we were mindful that it had been the greatest summer of cricket that probably ever will be. The only time the World Cup and Ashes had corresponded before was 1975, the inaugural World Cup, and we were blessed at Lord's that day in July that we had a World Cup final, which was better than the 1975 World Cup final. I didn't think I'd ever say that. Yep. And to have been there calling it and all the rest of it was kind of inspired. And then the Ben Stokes day at Leeds, we all love Test cricket. Like, we all cherish Test cricket and want it to have those moments. And I know Australia came out on the wrong side of that bargain, but to have witnessed what must at least be in the best three innings ever played in 143 years of Test cricket, it wasn't a bad result.
Bloody good result. Mm. How, just on Test cricket, and we're bouncing around a little bit here at the moment, but Test cricket's from an English perspective because there's a lot of short form stuff over there. The T20 caught on. They've got this 100 ball thing rolling in now. There's a T10 in somewhere across the UAE at the moment, I think, as well. How's Test cricket in your eyes? Because you've watched a lot more of it up closer than we have and spoken to a lot more people about its place, I suppose, in the cricket landscape.
I think the World Test Championship's really important in the short to medium term, ensuring that bilateral series that are played around the world. I mean, to say it has context is almost a hackneyed sort of cliched way of explaining it, but at least now into the future there'll be some organising principle, and we live in an economy and in a community which values instant gratification, and having some sort of tangible outcome at the end of 5 days where you can see a points allocation go onto a ladder and so forth, I think will help. There is definitely kinks in it, I should add. These two test series having the same weighting as a five test series is clearly a handbrake on the credibility of the comp initially, but over time I think that will help. The passion for test cricket amongst cricket people in England is wonderful. I mean, it's great, but the volume of people that follow cricket in England is a pinprick compared to who follow the game passionately and on a daily basis in Australia, where we're very blessed that cricket is pervasive as it is, especially red ball cricket in this country. Whereas over there, there's you know, over a longer period of time, there's been an erosion of the base as Premier League football is an 11-month-a-year obsession. I can see some parallels with Australian rules football, and you know the fact that we I'm part of it. Like I'm a rabbit Hawthorn supporter. I get the idea that you want to see the fixture, you want to see trade period be as big and bolshy as it is, but I think cricket in England has suffered from that over a longer period. But that's why they need the 100 to work. I mean, I've been on talk to you guys before about my serious reservations about a fourth form of domestic cricket. Yeah. But I was at the draft at Sky the other week over in the studios there and watching them duke it out and all the rest of it, and you kind of realise that there is so many resources being poured into this from the ECB, from the broadcasters, and to the players, to the administrators, to the coaches, and so on. They just need to find a way to make it work. It doesn't really matter, in my opinion, what it is. It's more that we need new human beings going to the cricket. So they organised the World Cup ballot in a way that I think a third of the people that went along were new to the game.
Okay.
The ECB pulled all of their data, all of their email addresses, in the way we're used to now as consumers when they ask you to tick the box and so on. They are the people they need to convert into longer-term fans and hopefully into test cricket. So that's a long way of saying it's in good nick with people who love it, but we need to broaden the audience.
So if you think back to here in Australia for the first time last summer, one-day cricket wasn't on free-to-air television. Yeah. And now this year there's no one-day cricket, which is another discussion. But in England, there's no test cricket on free-to-air television.
Yeah.
Now, it's been the case for a while, but what sort of impact has that had on cricket in England, the fact that you cannot have test cricket on free-to-air television?
Yeah, massive, because it's a paywall on poor people. So we want to include more people in the sport. Like, we talk about the explosion of women's cricket in the last 5 years in this country, and it's been comparable in England. They've made the similar investments. But if you can't watch it and you don't have access to watch it on television, that is a handbrake. Granted,
do you know what the percentage that has Sky in England?
Oh, off the top of my head, I can't recall what it is. I think it's roughly half of TV users do, but we know where that's skewed in terms of the socioeconomics, and we don't want to turn cricket into an elite sport. You look at the 1981 England side that beat Australia and the 2005 England side that beat Australia. I think I'm right in saying there's one private school kid in the lot. This England side, very different. Different complexion, different dynamics. So it's not about sort of being a classist thing. It's more just like we want to have as many people as possible. So now they, in England, are going to have some of the 100 on terrestrial television, on the BBC. Longer term, I know they want to integrate more international cricket on there. The highlights will be on there next year, which is a step in the right direction compared to what it's been before, at least being on that prominent TV station. So, yeah, I think they realise now that the decisions they made after the 05 Ashes to transfer all cricket onto pay television was something they regret, and they're trying to go the other way now. But equally, they know that it isn't just about television. There's other platforms and free-to-access. They talk about the idea that you can watch a game on your computer screen might be, over time, more important than watching it on your television screen. So, I mean, that's about a generation that's younger than all of us, but hopefully that's part of the solution too.
You spent a lot of time around the Australian team, obviously.
Yep.
What were a couple of your takes to come away from 3-4 months on the road with them, and what you saw them become, or in your mind?
Yep. I think one major thing would be they're in a much better place than they were when we were in South Africa last year. That sounds self-evident, but they did, I suppose, heed the lessons and the warnings and so forth that came out of that about their reputational the damage that had been done over a fairly significant period of time. It's kind of incongruous what happened in South Africa when you consider where they were in India 12 months before that. In early 2017, they did so well over there to not win the series, but they could hold their head up high the way they played. And they were moving to a certain being a certain way as a team. Darren Lehman reflected on that at the time, saying that it wasn't the same kind of crew as the one he inherited in 2013. They'd evolved, they were less aggressive and so forth. And then, for whatever reason, the Ashes of 17-18 flicked a switch. Maybe it's something to do with England and home Ashes and the added pressure.
Well, I think it had to do with the fact they knew that they could beat England if they were to play an aggressive brand of cricket.
Well, yeah, and aggressive when, I mean, aggressive when it turns into something that is different to just simply what we would identify as assertive cricket, meant that they had a lot of baggage into that South African series. They were exhausted. There were other variables, such as the misogynistic behaviour towards David Warner's wife and other members of the Australian travelling party, which things boiled over. So I think 12 months on or 18 months on, they were absolutely determined to present a good image of themselves, and I think they did that. It was commendable the way in which they've found a way to revamp, and this isn't confected. I think for the most part, they're a nice bunch of young men. They're not the sort of personalities who would be associated with going out there and being mongrels, because they're kind of not. They're nice blokes, and that's a good thing.
It is a good thing. It's nice to see. This leadership of Justin Langer and the influence
yep.
he's having and your interactions with him, what have you learned about Justin Langer in this time?
He's a pretty intense dude. there's no sort of getting away from his when he looks at you, you know you're being looked at.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And I'm sure it's the case for the players as well. The one thing I find interesting is that for all of the outside noise, and we're all part of that, of course, in talking about the game, inside that dressing room, they love him. There's a huge amount of respect for him and the way in which he's brought them together. And I think that's fairly telling. We can sometimes get too focused, I think, in the media on the perception and the communication and all the rest of it. The circus, the broader circus around sport. But yeah, inside the four walls, there is an enormous amount of regard for the bloke that's coaching them, which I think is telling, in that he is a quirky man in a lot of ways. I mean, the way that he is reflected on a lot of things over the years would suggest that he's an individual. He doesn't conform. And hopefully it feels as though he's fostering a similar individualism within that side. I think a fairly pervasive criticism that seemed to wash through the post-South Africa farrago was that they were, I think I described them as flat-pack cricketers. We put them on the production line, we spit them out the other end after being in the Australia age group cricket and state cricket, and then they come out and they're fairly limited people.
Yeah.
I think that Langer is making sure that they don't just create those sort of IKEA, put them together, put them on the shelf cricketers, that they can have a bit more breadth about themselves. And I mean, even the way that Stephen Smith, I heard on one of the promos you had playing earlier on, about the way he was talking about the three blokes that have stepped away from the game in recent times, like that shows a degree of sort of broader emotional intelligence, I suppose, that I think Langer is fostering and encouraging.
Is there a stability about this squad, this team, or is the fact that there is so many players, or has been so many players out of form, that there is a real air of anxiety within the senior sort of hierarchy of Australian cricket, the players, I mean, for getting a spot and not knowing where they sit?
Yeah, I guess that's an enduring conversation about selection, isn't it? And the way in which, I guess, there's two different philosophical perspectives on this. The Trevor Bayliss play them, who was former England coach, play them one too many tests before dropping them, give them one more opportunity than you otherwise would. And the alternative view is when you play someone who's desperately out of form in a test match when they should be omitted, it only leads towards an even worse result more often than not, because cricket is a game of touch and above the shoulder so often. So look, the way in which it was chopped and changed in England, I've been less critical than others because they got the result they were after, perhaps not in the final test. But had you said to Australian cricket fans, I reckon, at the start of the English summer, we're going to retain the Ashes in England for the first time since 2001, you would have taken it, 10 times out of 10.
Yep, I agree.
So I do feel as though you can look at individual decisions. For example, to leave Cameron Bancroft out after batting for a couple of hours against Jofra Archer at Lords, I would have thought, like, being a right-hander and finding a way to struggle through against the bloke who was at the peak of his powers might have been worthwhile persisting with him. And equally, you can kind of talk about the Travis Head decision and whether longer term effect of leaving the vice captain out, what might do to his confidence. But with the bowlers, they were able to show some bigger thinking. We usually have a pecking order where you've got the attack leader, the other opening bowler, and the first change. And when the opening bowler goes down, the fourth guy comes in and he becomes the first change, and the first change becomes the opening bowler. It's very regimented, very Australian.
Yeah.
In this series, we had a broader philosophy around maintaining the fitness of this group, not just in the five test matches in England, but maybe for the next 5 years. James Pattinson only playing two test matches is emblematic of that. I mean, even Josh Hazlewood not playing the first fixture, Peter Siddle being spliced in there, Mitchell Starc only being turned to once in Manchester when they thought the conditions suited him and the balance of the side. Even Mitchell Marsh coming in for the final test being played in deep September when they expected to get a bit more reverse swing, which he did. So credit to the selectors for being more nimble, especially on the bowling side of the equation, because it is perennially a tough job. I mean, the most ridiculous day each part of the cricket cycle is the day when the test team is selected. It's chaos on there. It's more of a sewer than usual, and people will always be very harsh and critical. But, yeah, I think that they've got a few credits in the bank after England.
Can Webb hit it over the fence? Or can she get it to the boundary for a tie? She's got plenty of it. It's high. It's long. It's a victory. Can you believe it? The Renegades. Courtney Webb hits cap over the fence.
It was an unbelievable finish. Jason Richardson calling all the action on Channel 7 yesterday. What about the performance? There's moments that you dream of, Scotty. Oh. There's the shot for goal after the siren when you're 5 points down in the grand final, and you snag that. But then there's this one where you need five to win, and last ball of the innings, you've got to hit a six to make that happen for your team. Courtney Webb did that yesterday for the Melbourne Renegades, and she joins us on the Breakfast Club. Webby, good morning.
Good morning, Harp. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, but I imagine not as well as you. Still basking in the afterglow of domination, Webby.
Yeah, it was a pretty good win yesterday. It was, really good to get one back on the sixes at Drummoyne after the semi-final we had against them last year.
Yes, well, that set you 139, and then you've sort of got yourself in a bit of a pickle through the middle order, but you were out there just dominating proceeds. 34 off 31 was the end scoreline for you. When you got to the crease, what were you thinking about your chances?
I think when Danny Wyatt was still out there and seeing them so well, we were always a chance. She's a world-class batter, and we saw that with her 50-odd that she made. There's always belief out there, and it's 2020 cricket, so you never know what's going to happen. And, yeah, we were lucky it was our day yesterday.
Courtney, you needed 15 off the last over. So take us through, obviously, the last ball. You're there. What's going through your mind? Did you have a shot in mind? Was that the one you wanted?
Yeah, I don't think she could have bowled in a better spot for her. I was looking to hit it, so that made life a little bit easier. Basically just knew the wind was sort of heading that direction. It was a little bit downhill, and, yeah, that's sort of a strength area for me. So it made it pretty clear to where I was going to go and try and hit it. And, yeah, luckily I sort of hit it pretty high, and I think the wind did most of the work for me in the end, which was good.
Off the bat, did you know it was six, or were you anxiously looking in the air?
I thought I hit it all right, but then I saw the girl out on the boundary run in a few, and I was like, oh, here we go. luckily I just kept going, so happy day.
Has it done anything like this before?
No, definitely not.
So this is the sort of stuff you dream about. So what was it like to live that out?
Yeah, it was pretty cool. I think especially because it was the Sixers, they're such a strong team in the competition. They have been for the last 4 years of the competition. So, yeah, it was really sweet to get a win over such a high-quality side, and, yeah, to get the girls over the line. It was a pretty crucial game for us, so we really needed to win.
It was a great performance. I still think, in that moment, like, a boundary's not going to cut it. But you get a tie with a boundary. You've had to win the game, and it's been a difficult season so far for the Renegades, although that puts you in a much better position. You've got to hit a six to win. With the conference before the ball, Webby, were you getting some advice, or is it just you riding solo? I've got this.
I had Molly Sharma at the other end, who was standing captain. And we sort of said, look, I'm just going to swing as hard as I can, just run. You never know what's going to happen. And she was a good support down the other end, sort of said, yeah, if we get a four, it's going to be a super over. So just, yeah, hit it as hard as you can. And lucky enough, it went over the rope.
And you make a good point with Molly being standing captain, that Jess Duffin, who's had a pretty good campaign for the Renegades, wasn't there. She was, I think she might have been crook, Webby, if I'm not mistaken. So it's a pretty impressive performance to beat the Sixers without the skipper.
Yeah, I think we all rallied pretty well as a team. We knew that Jess is such a crucial player for us, and to miss her for a game so important and against the Sixers was always going to be challenging. So, yeah, to sort of step up in those circumstances was awesome for us.
Hatcher cranks it out into the leg side. Two out there. They got him. Sutherland takes the catch. And that's it. Victoria get home. A patchy season, but they show all the fighting qualities that we've come to expect from this team over recent years.
A win for Victoria yesterday at the MCG. That's what you want to hear. Wins for Victoria at the MCG. They beat New South Wales even better, if you don't mind, in the Marsh Cup. And one of the reasons was the form of Matt Short, who really did set things up through the batting order of the Vics. And he's been good enough to join us on the Breakfast Club on a Monday morning. Good morning, Matty.
Morning, guys. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you, mate, because you were the difference yesterday. TD, you could call you. So I walk into training today and say, boys, I'm the difference. Just call me TD, because 88 off 85 really solidified things through the middle of the innings with young Jake Fraser-McGurk put on 95, which was a good result. And then, Matty, just to top things off, your little tweakers out there and you open the bowling.
Yeah, I think, first of all, it was a great win by the boys. But, well, it's good to play a part with both the bat and the ball.
So coming into it, you're coming off the Shield games, the interspersed one-day games, this series in the Marsh Cup is different to previous years. How do you go adjusting your game to the different ball?
I guess I'm still learning, and there's not too many guys that have been around while the Shield's been going and the one days as well. So
yeah,
a lot of us are still learning and coping with that, but I guess over the last few years, we've gone from Shield cricket straight into the Big Bash. So, in some ways, it's red ball into white ball. So, it is a bit of a challenge, but everyone's sort of getting used to it now.
So, the Shield game finished at about 8:30 on Friday night, and then you're playing again on the Sunday. Do you have a training session at all with white balls on the Saturday and all that sort of thing, or is it just pretty much your warm up on the Sunday was the change from red ball to white ball?
There was an optional session on the Saturday in between the games, so some of the guys that didn't play in the Shield game were able to go and hit some white balls, but I definitely took the option just to have a nice day off and relax and make sure I was ready for last night.
And so do you as a player like this way of doing it? As Half said, they're sort of interspersed through the Shield games, this one-day cup, the way it used to be. Do you like it that way, or do you prefer the way it was?
I personally like it, but I think, especially for us at Victoria, it's given a lot of young guys an opportunity in the one-day form. A lot of our fast bowlers in the Shield team have been rested over the season so far, and given guys like Jackson Coleman and Xavier Crone and guys like that, opportunity in the one day form, and they've really done well for us.
Now, you were batting with the Rooster, the 17-year-old. Take us through it from your perspective, this kid, 17, what he's doing.
Yeah, he's just an excitement machine. He came out to join me in the middle, and I didn't really have too much for him. I just let him play and let him do his own thing. He's got so much confidence for a young bloke at 17. So, as I said, he's just really exciting to watch him. Yeah, it's really good to bat with him out the middle and just let him strut his stuff.
So is it just this fearless of youth, no problem, Shorty, I'll handle this, you just get me the strike?
Yeah, that's the thing. Taking the cheek of singles off the last ball and taking his face in the next over. So, he's definitely fearless and definitely one to look out for.
You had a bit of a breakout year last year, Matt, and really did start to show everyone how good you were. Has that been having a confidence boost? Has that been for you coming into this season?
Yeah, it was massive. I think last year was huge for me. you know, in terms of playing consistent cricket and playing or getting picked, I guess, for starters. And this year's, sort of been a little bit disappointing so far in terms of carrying over that consistency. Like, I feel like the last couple of games I've regained a little bit of confidence, and hopefully I can bring that into the rest of the season.
That was the best of the Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.